Hey, thank you so much for having me here today. My name is April DeMille, and I am a mentor, a life coach, and a psychic medium. And I specialize in grief, trauma, and toxic relationship recovery. And thank you, Pearl, for having me here with you today.
Hey, everybody, it's Pearl, and I'm back again with Women Successful Living and another Conversations with Pearl episode. And I'm so excited to bring our special guest today. Her name is April DeMille. She is a psychic, medium, mentor, and life coach. She has made it her life's mission to build a community and nurture healthy connections for those that are seeking spiritual direction. Since the passing of her youngest child, she has been able to help others understand their own grief process and teach those she works with how to protect the sanctity that grief deserves. April, thank you so much for being on the show. And one of the things that reason why I want you to have on, and you and I have spoken before, is that, you know, last year, July, we lost our son at 25 years old. And it's a journey I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And so I just so excited we're going to have some of this conversation today. And if you're listening to us, just want to give some caveat, this might trigger you a little bit. So if it does, you know, please reach out. You can message me at hello@wsliving.com if you want to talk more. But I think it's an important subject that we talk about, because oftentimes people don't, in my opinion, since losing Matthew, they don't really talk about grief like it's okay. They're so scared to talk about it in some cases. I've actually lost some friends because they're like, well, I didn't know what to say to you. I'm like, that's all you had to say. Just that. Pearl, how are you doing? I just don't know what to say. It's as simple as that. So April, share your journey and some of your thoughts around that.
So I would agree, first and foremost, that there's probably going to be some trigger warnings here. I was, when you and I connected, I think it was almost a year ago. I knew that we had that journey in common, and I'm in the same boat as you. It is not something I would wish on my worst enemy, and, I wouldn't wish it on anyone. It's the most gut-wrenching thing anyone will ever experience. And, it is true that we live in a society that it is not normalized. Grief, death, it is not, people don't consider it as a normal part of life, even though it very much is. And you know, in our world, in our traditional upbringing, we die before our kids, not the other way around. And so, and for me too, I would say when I lost my daughter, I didn't just lose friends. I lost family. I lost friends. I lost coworkers. I lost pieces of me. I lost my other kids. I fucking lost everything. It was all gone. Anything that you thought you knew was over with. And so it's hard stuff to go through.
Yeah. It's sort of like, I don't know who said it where I heard it. Maybe it was a friend. It's sort of like, I mean, I literally can look at pictures on my phone and go, oh, that was the last day he was here. This is the next. Like, it was almost like that chapter, that door closed, even though there's, you know, I have those beautiful memories of him and things like that. It's like, that was before, this is the after. And, you know, like you said, we don't talk about that after. We it's sort of a taboo. It's like, I've heard comments, you know, I have a friend here locally that her son committed suicide, and she had people say, I think it was about 6 months after Matt passed, she posted out, somebody said, well, you should be over it by now. And I looked at my husband and I said, okay, let me just tell you something. If I call you from jail, it's because somebody said something stupid like that, because I'll probably punch them.
Oh, I went through that. I went through all of that and then some, and it was the most eye-opening experience in my life. But on the other side of that, there was so much beauty in learning who was good for me in my process and who wasn't. And I was very quick to say goodbye. I do not need you. If you're not bringing peace and support and kindness, then I'm not going to miss you. And so I had family members that did the same thing. Oh, it's been a year. You should be over it. Get over yourself. Get up and do stuff. Oh, right. Okay. And this also came from someone that wasn't even a parent, so they wouldn't have any clue. And so a lot of the journey was about standing up for myself, standing up for my process, allowing my process and coming to terms with that. It's okay to be a mess. You're supposed to be. It's not going to be fucking pretty. It's going to take everything you've got to get through this and then some. And that was really hard for me to realize.
Yeah. It's funny to talk about that, losing friends. So probably about a year, maybe a little bit less than a year before Matthew passed, I had a friend that was staying with me, and she had gone to this event, and somebody had passed away during this thing that she'd gone to. And when she was at my house, we had this discussion over something that I didn't want in my house. And she promised me it wasn't, because I felt like that thing that was in my house had brought back the spirit of this person that had passed. And I could feel the heaviness in my, you know, I'm not a psychic, I'm not anything, but I could just feel like something, I was sick. And I equated it to this thing that was in my house. So we had a conversation. She promised me it was going to go out of the house and everything. Well, the day that the story that I'm sharing with you, the day that I basically told her we don't line up anymore, this item I found back in my house. And so she'd gone. We had a little few words about it. She left. She was living with my husband and I. She came back, purposely came back late at night, because she should have been back around 8 o'clock. And if we had, you know, if we're as good of friends as what we were supposed to be, and you know I was that upset about this, you would have come right back after running your errand, but instead thought I was going to be in bed asleep. So in the middle of all of that, Matthew was in Texas, and he had, you know, Matthew had some struggles, and he had gone off to take care of some of the struggles in Texas. And he was talking to me, and he was struggling this one particular night. So I was up late, and I decided I just need to meditate. I just need to sit here. I need to meditate. You know, all that happened with her, and I'm worried about Matthew. So literally, I was in the middle of my meditation, and she happened to come home. And I brought up the fact about this thing, and she looked at me, and literally, and it's like, just like the day I adopted Matthew, and I know how he was conceived. This is also tattooed in my head. Literally said to me, "Well, Pearl, people die all the time." And I just looked at her. I said, "You know what? We don't line up ethically anymore. That young man was somebody's son. So you need to leave." So that led to that. And so here we are, you know, maybe a year later, I lose Matthew. And this person reached out to me on Messenger, and I just ignored it. And I went to bed, and I was sitting here thinking in bed, I couldn't sleep this one night because this young man was heavy on my heart, thinking about his mom, thinking about she wasn't with him. I don't know if she even knows. I don't know what happened. I don't know what the details were, but all I could think of was like going that comment about people die all the time. I'm like, so I messaged her the next day. I said, "You know what? I really wasn't going to message you, but I'm really thinking about this person's mom now that I'm in her shoes and walking a journey that she's walking. And it's really sad that you think that that comment is justifiable." And of course, you know, I get back, "You took it out of context," whatever. I know what I heard, whether it's the perception was people die all the time. And so I just looked at it and I just thought, you know, people think that people do walk this. You know, when people like us lose a child or somebody that's, you know, that such heaviness of that child, like you said, so gut wrenching. I mean, I remember I knew when Matthew passed, I felt him pass through me, you know? And so it's like you said, it opened my eyes to who deserved to be in my fence yard and who didn't. And I mean, even, you know, close family members, I've had to say, "You're locked out. You can't come in my fence right now." Because I do coach on boundaries. That's something that I'm a big coach and proponent of, boundaries. And so, and you're right. And what sometimes for me, some of the emotions with that was like going, "Wow, I thought you were my friend, but you truly showed up as what your true colors are. And I'm glad that I'm sad that it showed up this way, but I'm glad that that's one of the gifts my son left me."
Oh yeah. That's the thing, is there's so much beauty in it, because thank you for showing me who you are. Thank you so much, because now you're putting me on a course to being around people that are going to support me and love me and be there for me. And that's just not you anymore. And that's okay.
Right. Yeah. It's so, so true. So tell us about your daughter. Tell us about your beautiful daughter.
Yeah. So she, her name's Brielle, and she was today's her birthday. So yeah. So
I forgot about that when we booked this. We said it was her birthday.
Well, happy birthday, little
happy
girl.
Happy birthday. Yes.
Yeah. Today is actually her birthday. She would have been 14 years old today. When I lost her, she was not quite three. So there was a tragic passing. And unfortunately, I wasn't there. I was out of town in California taking care of some stuff. And she was with some other caregivers at the time, and she drowned herself in their backyard pool. And so that was September 2nd, and it was later in the day. And then by September 3rd, which was Labor Day that year, she was pronounced dead. So, yeah. So that was kind of what happened in a nutshell, like just the smallest story, the smallest version I can offer right now. But it was a crazy thing, very unexpected. And at the time I was fighting for my life and fighting for hers and fighting for my other kids. And it definitely didn't go the way I thought it was going to go. In the moment, you do what you have to physically, you're just going through the motions, but the shock just overcomes you. And it took me a couple months to even to come out of that shock before I started really processing what in the world even just happened to my life.
Right.
And at the time, you know, you think you're grieving the one loss, but the truth is you're grieving so many. You're grieving that loss, absolutely. And you're grieving what could have been and what would have been and the potential that you see in that person, but you're grieving that they're not physically there, that you can't hold them, you can't smell them. You're grieving the memories. You're grieving the pieces of you that have died. I was grieving my other kids. I lost them too, right? And they lost me because at that point I was checked out. I couldn't function to care for them. I was unavailable on every fucking level and I couldn't even care for them. So they had to go live with their dads. And I had to have people step in to help out. And luckily I had that, but it didn't make it easy. So they were going through a lot. There was just torment around every corner, right? And then on top of that, you got people out there in the world lashing out, telling you, get the fuck up, do something with yourself, get over it, saying horrible things that make your process so much more excruciating than it already is. You're already wanting to die, right? And if I hadn't been in the place that I was at the time, I definitely would have killed myself. There was no doubt about it. I would have given anything to just be with her and not here. Right. And so for those people that just keep lashing out and hurting you, it was so much work to come to a place of compassion and trying to understand that we have to consider the source. These people, even though they're not aligned with us, and even though they're saying horrible things that hurt us, it doesn't mean that they are horrible people. It means they lack an understanding. And in that moment, your discomfort is so overwhelming that they don't know what to do with that. And all they can do is offer whatever resources they have. And it comes across really shallow because their understanding is never going to be as deep as ours, ever, ever. Not in this time or probably any other.
Yeah, that's so true. That's why I was saying earlier about how, you know, I would have friends would call and just go, and I don't know what to say. And if you're listening, that's the best thing you can actually say to somebody that's like a parent that's lost a child is just go up to them and, you know, give them a hug and just be like, I don't have the words, but I'm here for you in whatever way you need me to be here for you. And you know, I feel like I want to write one of those things that the what not to say, you know, when somebody's lost a child, right? Yeah. Because the things like don't say, well, they're in a better place. Being with me was a better place. Yeah, the world sucks in some way, somewhere, somehow. However, being with me is a better place, you know what? Or you're going to see them soon when it's your turn. Well, no, I'd rather see them today, right? You know, and like you said, like one of the things that, For us, like we had talked to Matthew 20 minutes before he passed. He was in my car, my registration, his license was my address, everything. He was heading home to see his girlfriend. He was just recently moving in with her. And when he hit this intersection, it was very dark. You couldn't see the stop sign. Like, even I had problems seeing it that one night. And the road, the way it goes, it actually curves over a little bit, but it's going somebody's driveway, but it looks like it's an extension of the road. So I think he was going through that. Now, mind you, people that are listening, I'm going to be very full disclosure. Matthew had been drinking and he shouldn't have been drinking and been behind the wheel. I am thankful that nobody else was hurt. I certainly miss him, but literally 20 minutes before he passed, you know, we talked to him and he wasn't honest. He was not an Uber. Like he said, he was in my car. I called his girlfriend. I was like, is my car there? She's like, no. So I knew at that point. So I literally like was a wreck. Like I was shaking uncontrollably. And my husband's like, you need to calm down. You're going to have a heart attack. I was like, this is not a heart attack. Like something's happened. Like, so as a parent, I always tell everybody, you know, when something's happened to your child, like you can feel it. Right. And so the layer for us that's added on to that is we had great friends in our community that stepped up to help us through everything. The layer that was the hardest part is how he was treated, even in death, in the hours after he passed, because we found out on the news that he passed. We didn't have any knock at our door like they should have. And the Lakeland police was like, oh, well, it was a human error. How do you have a human error when you put in a system and everything? And everything was tied to everything tied back to us. In addition to that, like we didn't know until Wednesday, nobody from the police department contacted us. My nephew, who is a police officer in California, even called the Lakeland police and said, my aunt, this has happened. Can somebody please call her and tell her what's happening? Right. And so didn't get that phone call. It wasn't until my girlfriend calls me Wednesday morning and says, like by Monday afternoon, his name was named in the paper. Still nobody's at my door. We're the only Nexus kin. Yeah. And then Wednesday, you know, it says in the paper, if anybody has any more information. So I emailed to the guy and I said, how would you feel if your grandmother found out or your mother found out in the news like this? Immediately get the phone call. And I've gotten every excuse and everything. But the bottom line is, and you know, you can't prove it. And I've been very vocal with the Lakeland Police Department, so I have no problem saying this, that they did a form of racism to my son when he passed, because Matthew was mixed race. And I'm sure they looked at and saw, and those that are listening, you know, you're going to pass judgment and that's your right to do so. But, you know, yeah, Matthew had a DUI before, but he cleaned all that up. He'd gotten clean. He was doing really well. He made a choice that sometimes in addicts, they make choices that they can't take back. And we wish they could have, but in the end of everything, he deserved better than that. He deserved to be treated like a human being. And, you know, I did not want to believe it. It took a lot of my friends of color to say, Pearl, can we sit down and have a conversation with you? And I was like, and then that's, I saw it. Even my husband, like we always try to teach Matt rise above that. But like you were saying earlier too, the people that come around you and everything happens so fast, like literally that shock and everybody's coming, you know, and so forth. We had to go tell our son. It was just the four of us plus Matt's girlfriend. So we had to go tell our younger son at his apartment, and to tell him that was the hardest thing in the world. The one commitment we made as the three of us was to say that we wouldn't hold our emotions back, that whenever something was happening, like the tears or whatever, it's okay to let them come out because we don't want to hold it back. So even when family was coming in, we would say to them, don't not cry in front of us because we need that. That's comforting for us because we know those are memories you're having of Matthew, right? And so in all of that chaos, I, like you said, it took me, like Matthew passed July 25th. I think my mom left like the end of August is when she finally left. So finally, that was around the time that I was like, okay, well, in the middle of all that stuff that's happening, I'd gotten a phone call from somebody who said, hey, September 5th or whatever the date was in September, we want to honor you with a day named after you in Syracuse, New York. My grandfather's from Syracuse, New York. I was not from Syracuse. I'm like, why Syracuse? But I said, yes. So after we left, I called her and I called my business coach. I'm like, I don't think I can do this. Like I physically didn't think I could do it. I don't know what I said yes to. She goes, well, then call and say, you can't do it. You can give yourself permission to do that. So right. When I called and told her, she's like, Pearl, everything's been printed already. So I was like, okay, it's Syracuse, New York. For whatever reason, my grandfather isn't doing this because I had no reason to be in Syracuse, New York, other than he was from there. So I decided to go and to do that. But as I look back, like that first year of Matthew's passing was the shock, the, oh my God, I can't believe it. This, you know, next year, we're in the year two now. It's been about the acceptance, like accepting that I can't change it. I can't pick up the phone and, you know, I talk to him all the time. I have conversations with him all the time. I visit him at his graveside and I yell at him or I slap, you know, whatever. I laugh and joke, whatever. But I can't change that. So now I'm at the point of like, for me, and I don't know how it is for you, April, is like learning how to accept what's happened and how do I still step into my life? Because for me, Matthew saw me finally figure out who the heck I was. He saw me overcome saying yes to everybody, which is, you know, what I coach on is like, how do I show up for me? And being a people pleaser addict is who I was. So he saw me overcome that. So he helped me, I feel like, for me, my motivation is that he saw that for me before he passed. Mm-hmm. Why would I live differently just because he's not here? Right. And so for me, that's how I move forward and like push through it every single day. I mean, and like you said, I have another, you know, I have my husband and another son. And so I want to show up for both of them too. Right. And so that can be hard. It can be overwhelming at times.
Yeah. And for me, it was a little different because I didn't want to push and show up for anyone. I didn't give a fuck.
Right.
I'm not here for you. And in my opinion, I was like, I'm no good for my kids or anyone else. I can't even take care of me. I don't care. And so for me, I had to learn how to fight for my life for me and right. No one else. The pressure of anyone else was enough to crumble me. So my mindset had to be completely geared different. And so that for anyone listening, that doesn't work for everybody.
Right.
But it is what worked for me. I just had to like think about things different, just release the pressures of everything else so I could heal. And, you know, that's, I will say too. So the first year I was in shock, probably almost the entire year. I think by the second and the third year, those were the years that hit me the hardest emotionally, because I was coming out of the shock, but the acceptance hadn't really happened yet. So you're like in that in between stages. It's but then by the fifth year, my acceptance was like in full bloom, and I was much like you. I came from a background of addiction and abuse and all kinds of terrible things, and when Brielle died, I was actually in rehab in California fighting for my own life. I had put myself there because I didn't like who I had become. And that's when she died. And so I had to leave rehab. I was already sober, but I had to leave there, fly back home to Texas and tell her two sisters and her brother what had just happened. And they were little still. They were all still fairly young. So we had to have, you know, a meeting and tell the babies what happened to their sister. And that was horrible. That was the worst thing ever. And then on top of that, now that they're in excruciating pain and they need their mom, I had to leave them and go back to rehab, because if I hadn't, I knew I would kill myself and they wouldn't have a mom. And it was, you know, now in retrospect, my kids understand that decision. At the time, they were absolutely devastated. I mean, that was definitely not what they want to hear from their mom. Like, you're doing what? You're leaving again? Like, that is, and I knew, you know, eventually they'll understand this. But right now, if I don't make myself go be locked up in safety, I will kill myself. And I was perfectly okay with that decision.
And I think that takes, I think for me, that listening to you, that's a form of bravery, because you know, like you said, you have to go tell your children, and then you've got to put yourself, because, and ultimately, like you said, the bottom line is take care of yourself, because then you can take care of those kids that, you know, that you're talking about. And sometimes we have to make some of those hardest decisions in the middle of like something so tragic like this, you know, and people don't understand, like they don't get it. They don't understand it. And it can be very, very overwhelming. Can you recognize that pivotal point for you when you started going like the acceptance part? Like, how did that how did that come about?
I think it all really fell into line when I stopped denying the fact that I was a psychic medium. So in 2017, and so I was always a psychic medium, but I stayed in the closet and hid it for till I was almost 38 years old, I think. And I would say that I had finally reached that point where I had to acknowledge that these abilities weren't going away. I'd tried my whole life to give them back and that wasn't working. And everything was being stripped from me. My world was falling apart. I had my child die. I had other family members die. I had friends' kids die. I had like, everything was a mess. And I was like, the only thing I've never done was lean into it and admit that this is who I was, that this is what I'm able to do. And I'm much like you. I can talk to my daughter anytime I want. I'm already in between worlds all the time. So that was probably my pivotal point, is I was finally like, okay, well, this is what I am. This is who I am. This is what I do. And now I'm going to show up in the most vulnerable way that I know how. And that was just by admitting that this is an ability that I've always had. And the moment I did that, things started to just change. It was me sliding into my purpose. This is how you get out and you reach the world and you help them, right? You share these stories, you share these experiences, and you empower others to use their voice. And that's what we do.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think we have to share, because there's people that are, you know, that are going to listen to this, that are going to, you know, unfortunately, some of the people listening are going to end up walking this path that we're on, right? And so if there's words that we can leave behind, they can come back and listen to this. And if you are listening to this and you know of a parent or friend of a parent, somebody who's lost a child, you know, feel free to share this, because if we can empower them to understand that, like you said earlier to April, that you're not alone. We're not alone. I mean, I was shocked, and I don't like to equate it this way, but for me, it's the only way I can say to my husband, you know, you buy a new car and you see your car everywhere, right? I was shocked how many of my friends in circle had either just lost a child or shortly after lost a child. You know, Matthew had two friends that died from suicide. He had a friend that probably the May, it was like he passed in July. So I think it was the May before he passed. He had a friend who was home, slipped in the bathtub, fell and hit his head, and nobody found him, right? And so I remember sitting in the service with Matthew, and he had seen Lemire's mom and gave his mom and dad a hug. And I remember him sitting there near me, and he goes, I don't like this, mom. I don't like this crying. I don't like, you know. So when he did pass, we decided, and for me too, I had had a boss many years ago when I lived in California, that had passed away of brain cancer. And one of the things he did is he wanted a big celebration, right? So yeah. I always knew for me, that's what I wanted. So Never knew I was going to have to do it for my son beforehand, right? And people are like, you're so strong. I'm like, I want to celebrate him. I want people to celebrate. Yeah, he had struggles. He made mistakes, but nobody can look in the mirror and say they don't have struggles. They haven't made a mistake, right? All of our mistakes are different in some way. But I remember that I was like, I wanted to make it like fun. And I remember at the wake, they had like a room we were all at. We had a little service. And it was so funny because I always love to share the story about Matthew. Matthew loved tattoos. I got a tattoo, you know, and he's like, he was a senior in high school. So I want a tattoo. I'm like, no, you can't get it. Well, he ended up getting a tattoo of a cross or something. So years later, like probably about a year and a half, maybe before he passed away, he comes home. I know my next tattoo, mom. And I shared this story. And in the middle, I'm sharing the story. The videos are playing behind me, right? And, you know, I'm sharing this because you're talking about the psychic abilities and things like that. And so I'm sharing the story how Matthew comes home and he's so excited. I know my next tattoo, mom. I'm like, oh, what's it going to be? He goes, I'm going to put a picture of you on my chest. And I was like, not only no, but hell to the no, are you doing that? Right. And he's like, why? That's such a cool idea. I go, sit down. Let's just talk about your intimate with a girl. She ain't going to want to see mom's face on your chest. Are you out of your mind? I'm like, are you kidding? No. So he came home a few weeks later and he came home. And as I'm telling the story and as I'm about to do what I'm doing, if you're watching on YouTube, you can, but basically I'm putting my two arms together and he did both of his arms together. And what he did, he had Chuck's name, my husband's name on one arm and my name on the other one. So when he put them together, he could see in the mirror both of our names. And I was like, okay, that was so cool. Well, as I did that at the service, that popped up on the video. And I was like, okay, Matt, you're with me, you know? Aww. So it was just so cool. But I want to talk about that. I want to like talk about that gift you have, because I truly believe it's a gift. And some people listening, you know, I know there's all different opinions out there, religious wise and everything. And you're entitled to your opinion. And I'm not going to sway your opinion in any way. That's not what we're trying to do. But I do believe that there are gifts that we have. Yeah. And I remember like shortly after he passed, I remember I'd gone to Syracuse and got that award, right? I came home and my younger son picked me up and brought me home and my husband was out and I was laying on the couch. I was so, so tired. And we have this one blue chair in the family room and Matthew would always sit and like have conversations with us. So I'd fallen asleep and I got like this wake up to like this upset stomach, not quite like what I had when Matt passed, but like I could feel like something's wrong. Like something's calling me. And for whatever reason, I was drawn to this blue chair. And all that I was getting from this blue chair was the name Nick. Well, Matthew had two friends named Nick. And I literally look at the chair. I'm like, okay, Matt, I don't know which Nick you want me to talk to, but you're going to need to go visit them because I don't know what to do. Right. Mm-hmm. And the next day I happened to reach out to the one Nick who would end up being for to his mom and just said, hey, I'm just checking in. How are you guys doing? You know, she called me. She actually had messaged me through DM and I was like, that's too weird that she's messaging me. So I called her and she's like, that's so funny. You're asking about Nick. Nick had gotten, had something happen that morning. And he's okay, but he had something happen that Matthew was always on him about. Stop doing that, dude. It's not going to, you know, you're going to get yourself in trouble, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh my God. And so I said, I can go get him if you need me to go get him. Well, when it came time for him to get picked up, she told him that he's like, why did you tell Miss Pearl? You should have told Miss Pearl. And she said, well, she said Matthew came. She didn't have any idea. She called me and want, you know, so something was up. So, I mean, I do believe in those abilities. I do believe like I can feel him around me in certain times and certain things happening. But when was it like, you know, we hear this all the time. People say, you know, your loved ones send you signs. And, you know, I remember Matthew used to tell the story all the time in our old house. We've been living in this house for about 2 years, almost 3 years now. And our old house used to say, Mom, I see Mimi all the time. Like, I see this blue light around up the hallway where she all the time. I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not going to just, whatever you're feeling, great. You know, I'm not going to dissuade that. So tell me, when was like the first time that you allowed yourself to tap into that? And
oh, then I was that way. I was doing it ever since before when I was in diapers. Like, I've been doing it always.
Wow.
There wasn't like a moment where like I was later in life and all of a sudden it turned on. I was always that way.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So when I was really little, I would have spirits standing around my bed. I would get scared at night. I would tell my mom about it. I would freak out. And I was always brushed off. Like, I was the only little psychic in the family. So I didn't have people in the family before me that knew what to do about this or knew what was happening. And,
right.
And I was in a family full of addiction and abuse. And so I was taught at a very young age that it scared people and that I probably should keep it quiet, right? Because they can't see what I see.
Right.
And so that's why it took me so long to admit that, well, this isn't going away.
Right.
I tried that already. It's here to stay. This is what it is. So,
right. So have you found that it's given you comfort? Like when you, with your daughter and
I think that's one of the biggest advantages is because I can already communicate. I don't see the separation between she and I. It looks different. Our worlds look different, but are we separated? Not at all.
Yeah.
I can talk to her anytime I want to. And so that's the advantage of being or allowing the oneness of all your senses and your abilities, right? It's not just like I'm gifted. That's not true. We're all gifted.
Right.
We all have the innate ability to do these things. Not all of us know it or know how to do it.
Right.
And when you are tapped in and you do know how, then it changes the way you view life after death.
Right.
It changes the way you communicate with life after death. It changes everything.
Yes. I think that's, it's hard for people to understand that, but you know, like you said, I talk to them all the time. I feel them around me all the time. It's funny. I like sharing this story. So I learned to meditate. I've got a friend who teaches meditations and, my in-laws taught me what real parental love was like. At a young age of 19, I met my husband and, I remember when my mother-in-law passed, Matthew said to him, does Mimi ever come to you in a dream? I'm like, nothing, you know, nothing at all. And so my mother-in-law passed, and then her aunt passed, and then her brother passed. And the funny thing is they all passed almost as many months apart as they were born, right? So it's really, really cool. So yeah. I was doing this, my friend Sharon, she teaches you how to meditate over a 30-day period. So every day she works with you. So this one time, I don't even know what the meditation was called, but this one time I told my husband, I want to meditate in the bedroom, so don't come in the bedroom. Normally I would do it up here in my office. And I remember sitting there during meditation and my coach, Sharon, asked her, she goes, you were laughing and you were crying. I'm like, I didn't even know I was doing that. I you know, out loud, I knew inside I was doing it. So my mother-in-law came forward and she said some words like, I just want you to know, I'm always with you or something. And I was just like, so grateful, like I had gratitude. And then my Aunt Olga, who her and I were just as close as my mother-in-law, like we did so much stuff together. She came in, she's like, you know, we're all here together and everything. Well, Uncle Rob, he was hilarious. So Uncle Rob could not say this is ridiculous. He would say this is ridiculous, right? So he pops his head around. He's like, this is ridiculous. You're not even seeing me and you're not even talking to me. And I was just laughing so hard. And when I walked away from that meditation, I was like, oh my gosh, people tell me meditations are so bad. That was the most beautiful thing that had ever happened to me in my life, you know? And that's why I still to this day, I still to this day enjoy meditation. I enjoy journaling. I enjoy the quietness sometimes of the house and nobody being around and just reflecting on things, you know, whether it's my son, Matthew, but other family that's gone or whatever before. And so, so I wanted to ask you, I know that when I read your bio, you talk about how it's your life mission to build a community and nurture healthy connections for those that are seeking that spiritual direction. How do you do that with your clients? Like what kind of things do you help your clients walk through with that?
Wow. So that's a great question. So it depends on the client and what they're after, right? So I guess it's a case by case, situation, but in general, it's, you know, I'm the goal is to teach people how to be okay with being a spiritual being, how to be okay with all of their senses and how to discipline all of those senses and how to make sense of them. Right. Cause like when I was young and I didn't have any family members or mentors or anything like that, that's what I needed. When I was going through these harsh awakenings and my senses were all over the place and you're going through transformation and sometimes it seems crazy and you don't really know how to make sense of it. I needed someone. I needed me, right? I needed the version I am now. I needed that version to be like, hey, calm down. This is okay. Here's what's happening, and kind of lay it out for them and help give them guidance because you're on the right path. You're doing the right thing. And so that's basically what it comes down to.
And that's awesome. Cause you have to also get to that acceptance part too, you know, and all that. Yeah. So what are some of the things that share some of your success stories, like when you're working with some of them?
I mean, I've taken people from being in their full blown addiction and cutting themselves and suicidal to, actually somebody just celebrated a year of sobriety. And so that's that they come in from a very traumatic moment and we're turning their lives around. And it's not we, it's them. They're turning their lives around. They're showing up, they're doing the work. They just need a cheerleader. They need somebody that can encourage them to get through these steps. And that's what I'm doing. And along the way, I give guidance, insight that comes in a lot of which is intuitive in nature. And based on my experience as well. And so that's basically what's happening. We're turning those narratives around. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at life with excitement instead of fear and hopelessness and despondence. We're not doing that anymore.
Yeah. So what would you say to some of the listeners that are listening that are like, yeah, right. You know, like how do you address some of that when people like push back and, you know, it's their belief. It's their, you know, like, how do you help people understand what is some of the things you're doing?
I'm not in the nature of trying to make anyone a believer. They either come to me ready or they don't come to me and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm not here trying to pressure anyone or change anyone's mind. I'll meet you when you're ready. And that's all that I could say about that.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. Before I ask you the next couple of questions, how are your older kids doing?
Oh, they're doing great. That's part of the beauty of the story is, you know, you lose everything, but then it comes back to you and it comes back to you so beautiful and so different and in a way that you would have never, ever expected. And my kids are, they're amazing.
That's awesome.
They're amazing, amazing people, amazing. They're in that. So my youngest now is 16. So she's going through her teenage phase and trying to find her voice and her independence. And then my oldest two are, you know, in their early adult years and they're blowing my mind every day.
That's good. Way to go, mama. That's awesome. That's been good for them too. That's awesome. Yeah. All right. So we're gonna do a little shift here. What does April do for self-care?
Oh, I'm all about self-care. So it just depends on what I feel like I need that day, but I tend to, because I'm an empath, I I take a lot of time to myself for recharging. So I'm very much an introvert, believe it or not. I'm very much an introvert. I'm not the social butterfly really at all. And so that's just, I would say that that's probably the biggest thing I honor is how much time I need to myself.
So what was, if you, so one of the things that I love doing when I work with my clients, especially because I work with women that are about 40, you know, that midlife, 40, 45 to about not quite, you know, in the mid 50s, 60 year old. And so one of the things that I find is that for so many years, like we've done this thing of, you know, putting everybody before us, not knowing how to say no to others, or we become this high achiever, you know, we get this one award, we're going to go get the next one. We don't create that harmony in our life. We don't create things and communicate to our loved ones, even to our jobs, our professional careers, that I need to do something for me too. I can't just always be at work, you know, overworking. I can't come home and be stressed out at home, right? So one of the first things we work on is, because oftentimes when I ask that question, what do you do for your self-care? They can't answer. I don't have time. I get mad just making a grilled cheese sandwich. You want me to do something for myself, Pearl? So I always like to take them and talk about like, okay, let's talk about then what brings you joy? Like if you were to tell me truly what brings you joy, and you know, if you have kids, of course you're going to say the kids, but, and so, and then what I do is I love to break down like, why does that bring you joy? Like truly, why does your children seeing the sun in the morning, whatever it is that brings you joy, what about it brings you joy? And so, so one of the things that I like to do is to really break that down. So I would love to know if you'll play along with me. What brings you joy?
I think the biggest thing that brings me joy is doing things that feel like they resonate in my soul. If I'm not doing something with intention and passion, then I'm not going to be happy. So that's probably the number one thing for me.
So tell me some of the things you do that bring you joy.
I do a lot of journaling. I do a lot of writing. I'm like a little sponge. I love to constantly learn and experience. I'm teaching with purpose. I live my life with purpose. And so those are probably some of the things in a nutshell.
Okay. So what, and just play along with me. So what about that brings you joy?
Being happy. If it brings me happy, then that's all that matters to me. Yeah.
I love it.
It's knowing the difference between what makes you feel good and what makes you not feel good. And if it feels good, then we're going to keep it.
Absolutely. I love that. And it's so true. Like, you know, oftentimes like I worked with a hairdresser and she was like, well, cutting hair brings you joy. I'm like, yeah, but why does it bring you joy? Well, because I see them transform. I go, that's great. I go get my hair cut, you know, and I transform in the chair, but then I go home and I, you know, and as we broke it down, it just came down to, she loves to see them look in the mirror and look in and not just see the beauty on the outside, but feel it on the inside, you know? And I think it's so important that, you know, if you're listening, to, you know, kind of sit down and think about what brings you joy and like truly, why does it bring you joy? And if it's your kids, great. I mean, you know, my gosh, my kids bring me joy. I mean, what I loved about Matthew is that no matter what was going on, he still tried to find a way to smile, no matter what stress or whatever, he would still, you know, he could come in the door and try to get, in fact, on his gravestone, it says these nuts. And the reason why it says these nuts is because he would come in the house and every so often he would get me. And so when we're doing his headstone, they said, well, what, you know, what do you want to put on it? And I just started laughing and I just sitting there, my head's going around and Chuck goes, you're not. I'm like, we are. And the young man that was sitting there helping us, I said, these nuts. And I said, because he would walk in the door and he would always get me. I knew he would do it, but he'd always get me. He's like, hey mom, guess what? I'll be what? And he goes, these nuts. I'm like, oh, you know, you got me, right? And so that was something I loved about him. And then, you know, I talk about my younger son, Nate. I talk about how, you know, what brings me joy is his mind. He is so smart. He can build computers. And at the same time, his mind is so smart in that he will sit and listen to you have your opinion and he'll know history, like going back to whenever. And he can have intelligent conversation while respecting your opinion too, right? And he's 24 years old. That generation right now just doesn't really do that very often, you know? And so I tell him that's, you know, our kids can bring a story, but truly why? So I hope you're listening that's a great example about thinking about what really brings you joy. So now, and I think I know some of these answers for you, April, but I'm not going to make an assumption. I would like to know, you know, to do our joy list, to enjoy the things that are on joy list, There's some things we have to put on what I like to call a not to-do list. Like, what things do you need to stop doing so you can go work on your joy list, right? So if you were to think about three things that are on your not-to-do list, what would you say those might be?
I feel like I've already done all that work, so I don't really have a not-to-do list so much anymore because I'm already always doing the inner work. So for me, I couldn't even tell you because I'm such a big believer in doing what brings me joy and happiness already and super disciplined in that. So I can't speak on that for everyone. In general, I would say not saying yes to everything and everybody. That is a big no-no, right? I would say this is the not list, right?
Yep. To-do list. Yep.
Right. Constantly staying busy. I think that is a big no. Mm-hmm. And I would say not facing your fears is a big no.
Oh, those are good ones. So, because you're so right, like not facing your fears, because I have a couple of clients right now, this is happening to them where they're stuck in an area of their life that they know they need to make a big change. And their foot's kind of one foot, maybe a couple toes for some of them are just on the other side of that fear of getting that fear. And I'm like, if I could just get you to take one bigger step, the other step will come right behind it, you know? And so that fear can so hold us back. And, you know.
Well, and it's so ingrained in us because we're just conditioned that way all through our lives, a lot of times through our family first, and then through our societies and our communities. So it's just so heavily ingrained in us. And then we lose sight of our own individuality, our own confidence, our own abilities, and we rely on others to build that up. And so that's why it's just such shaky territory when you're starting out.
Right. Yeah. It's so powerful. I love that so I want to thank you for playing along because, you know,
Done
the work, but I wanted the listeners to hear that in general, these are some of the things, and you know, that the negative thoughts, you know, can be one that's on your not-to-do list. Stop thinking so negative of yourself. That's the area that I love.
Especially if you're into manifestation and you realize how you're creating your reality, those are definitely things that you want to try to avoid is like self-criticism and self-hatred and like all the negative thinking and being able to stop those thinking traps and like realign your thoughts. It's a big deal. It's hard work.
Yeah. And cause it absolutely can hold us back and, you know, and not let us move forward to what's waiting for us by doing that. Yeah. Yeah. And it can be, and that's, you know, that's the other area that I love in our Shiro League that we work on is we work on those things that sabotage and judge us in our mind. And we work on ways you can sage that, whether it's just something as simple as rubbing your fingers together or having a phrase or, you know, even having an affirmation statement or something, you know, it can be so, so powerful. And so you brought up affirmations and manifestation. So I want to ask you, what are your thoughts? Like when you, do you do affirmations? First of all, let me ask you this.
Oh yeah. Oh, every day, every single day.
So give us an example of how an affirmation you might say to yourself.
I am a being of unlimited nature.
I love that. So, you know, and that's a great example because I love that you said that I'm a being of unlimited nature. You know, oftentimes I've seen in my coaching that someone will come to me, they're already doing affirmations. They'll say, well, I stand up in front of the mirror and I say, I have all the abundance in the world, but nothing's in my checking account. I'm like, it's because you're not believing it. You're not saying it so that it can receive, right? So I said, let's flip it. Let's flip the switch. What if you said, I am taking action today to, you know, stand in front of the mirror or wherever you want to do it. Say, I'm making steps and actions that I'm going to take today are going to be actions that will lead me to have more abundance into my life, that will lead me to be able to receive abundance, right? So you're not saying I have it, right? I'm like, you're saying, what am I, you're telling the brain, let's take some action steps today to start that, right? And I think it's really powerful when we can look at doing affirmations differently, right?
Affirmations are a really good skill to have. But when you are creating your reality and you have that awareness, you do have to be careful because there are things like that there are steps to the process. And if you're saying the words, but you don't have the belief, then you're going to have to get in there and unlayer that stuff and figure out what your core belief is, because your reality is not going to align if your belief is one thing and your words are another. There's confusion there. And so, it's a lot of work.
It's so true. I'm looking at the clock and I can't believe our time is flying by so fast. So I want, before we get to the last part of the session, tell everybody how they can reach you.
Yeah. So you can reach me at my business Facebook page is Exordium Healings. And then my Facebook page is April DeMille. And then my website is exordiumhealing.com.
And we will put that in all the show notes for everybody. So if you're not, didn't get to write it down, don't worry about it. We'll put that all in there for you. Okay. So first of all, I want to thank you for playing along with the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much fun. So what do you have upcoming? Is there anything upcoming we should know about?
Actually I do have something upcoming. I haven't done a Facebook Live in a while. And so me and two of my other friends that are also psychic mediums are going to be doing some like a live on December 23rd. And we're going to be pulling some Oracle cards and just doing some free little mini reads and just having a good time right before Christmas.
Awesome. Sounds like fun. So you'll send me the links. We can throw those in there too, because I think we'll be out with the show before that as well. So I love that you're doing that. All right. So I forewarned April that we do these amazing cards. They're not quite like Oracle cards, but they're a lot of fun. So these are, if you've listened to me before, you already know, but if you're new, we have these cards are called Better Questions, Better Life. My friend Carol Gill and her friend Diane Allen created over 70 cards. You just pull one a day and it's meant to help you either meditate, journal, think about your day, carry it with you, take a picture on your phone or whatever you want to do with it. So April's going to tell me when to stop shuffling. We're going to read the card and we're going to answer the card together. So tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
All right. So, this one's an always interesting. What if? That's it. What if? What's it mean?
What if you really believed in yourself?
I love that. What if you really believed in yourself? Yeah. What if you took some time to go sit in a swing 5 minutes a day? How could it change your life? Yeah. Right. Yeah. I love that.
If you could have one day with no fear whatsoever and you could just like get out there and do everything you want to do. What if you really believe in that?
Yeah. I love that. Those are great. That was so good. Every so often that card comes up. I'm like, oh, sometimes I don't like that card.
But it's good because like then it gets you, it opens your mind. And we need that expansion to help push us and help motivate us. And a lot of us, like I know for me, like I need inspiration every minute of every day or else I'm going to sit there and do nothing. Absolutely nothing. So I need to be inspired.
Yeah. And for me right now, I think for me, it also is what if you glowed up in your life? What if you did steps that help you glow up in your life? And we're going to be having a glow up challenge coming up here over the next couple of weeks. It's going to be a 30-day challenge on things to do for self-care to really help you glow up in your life. So
I love that. That sounds fun.
Well, you'll watch for it. You'll see me post it and everything. You'll have to join us. But I just want to thank you so much for coming on. And, you know, as an unfortunate that we're walking something commonly, it's been great that you reach out to me and vice versa, that we support one another. And I really, really appreciate that. And so I just want to remind all the listeners too, if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe. It's Conversations with Pearl. But if you're listening on the podcast, share this with everybody you know. If you want to be a guest and want to learn more, just reach out to me. But we also have our Shira League, as I mentioned earlier. If you want to know more about our glow up or some of the things we have upcoming with Women Successful Living, it's easy. Just say Shiro and email it to hello@wsliving.com. That's hello@wsliving.com. And you can reach out to me and I'll get you that information. But in the meantime, I want you to remember that you come into this world, you're an oyster on the outside. It's a little rough. You're going to go through some bumps. You're going to have some things that are going to happen in your life, like April and I've shared. But if you can keep working on it and keep just give yourself some grace, as you open up that shell, you'll find your inner pearl. And I hope each and every one of you go out today and find your inner pearl to greatness. Have an amazing rest of your day. You've been listening to me for a little while, but I wanted to really explain to you what a Shiro is. You hear me talk about on the radio show and the podcast often about what is a Shiro. And what I want you to know is a Shiro is you. You are listening today and you are a Shiro. But what do I mean you're a Shiro? So a Shiro is somebody who is strong. You have so much strength and maybe you don't know it. Maybe you're not seeing it inside yourself. And you need help tapping into that. And that's what I love to help women do, is to find your strength within and help you pour it out of yourself, help you become the strong person you are. And H stands for happy. You know, we all want to be happy, but sometimes finding the roadmap to happiness isn't easy. And so sometimes we have to help make that deep dive into answering heartful, soulful questions about what does it really mean to be happy? What brings me joy? What do I need to say no to so that I can become the person I want to be and the strong person I want to be that's also happy? And then empowered. You are empowered just by listening to this podcast that we do or the radio show to be the person that you are meant to be, that person inside, that little girl that's inside, just waiting to come out. We want to empower you through our Shiro method to become that strong, happy, empowered person that you are. But it's not an easy step. So, you know, we have to cut through the fluff and the excuses and the drama and the mess so that we can make that progress. Because as we start making the progress, then what happens is you start seeing the radiant you. You start arriving at the level that you've created, that divine roadmap, where you're finally starting to live intentionally. And as you live intentionally, then you realize your strength really is powerful, that your happiness is meaningful, and that you are empowered to pay it forward to others, to do the things you want to do without guilt, because you deserve it and because your radiance is showing. And then as you work through that progress, then what happens is you become your original self. You become that authentic you that you're supposed to be. Like, you've done that deep soulful work and you're starting to make that path of satisfaction and that happiness you've been craving. And so you start laying down the foundation of your success. When you wake up in the morning, you find yourself looking in the mirror, realizing that you don't recognize your old self anymore, that you see yourself reflected everywhere in your stride, your relationships, your career, and even your hobbies. So as you align your outward trajectory with that inward path, you start gaining that clarity and that confidence and courage to focus and follow your internal direction. So really, that's what a Shiro is. And it's not easy to get there, right? We need to learn the steps to become that true Shiro, to tap into those superpowers that you have within. And that's why we have what's called our Shiro League. And if you want to join a community of women that are working on exactly these things that we're talking about, that are becoming strong, that are happy, that are empowered, that are radiant and original, that want to tap into things that bring them joy and say no to the things that don't let them enjoy the things that they want to do. We meet every Sunday evening from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern time on Zoom. No makeup. If you want makeup, you can, but just come in to be your radiant self, to be that original person you are. Because really, as you look at your biggest sources of stress, we want to help you with our Shiro League and our Shiro method to help you listen to that internal compass so you can start decluttering your distractions and really identify what's really missing in your life. Like, what brings you joy? And what, we're not talking foo-foo feeling stuff, like really what fills your cup? What makes you so happy to put your cape on first? And as we do that and you become that Shiro you're meant to be, then what happens is you are radiant. You have created an opportunity to release what you need to say no to so that you can start fulfilling your purpose. So you can start stepping out of your comfort zone and really into what brings your joy. And our Shiro Method Roadmap is that crucial step of helping you to live the life you want to be that Shiro you want to be, to tap into what it is you deserve to do, what it is you've been desiring to do. And listen, if you're a mom and you've got kids and you're a working mom outside the house, you're not all about the mom title. You are Pearl. You are Sue. You are Jacqueline. You are Stella. You are somebody that matters and somebody that has goals and visions that deserves to create that divine roadmap so that you finally begin and, like I said, live your life intentionally. So if you're ready to do that and you want some help with that, I would love to invite you to a free call with me. Just let's talk about where you're at, how you get to where you want to go. What are your goals? What brings you joy? What do you need to say no to? And I would love to help you peel back those layers so that you can arrive at the real answers so that we can cut away the fluff and the excuses and the drama and help you make that real progress. Because we're not promised tomorrow. We're not promised the next 30 seconds. And if you are here and you're listening, then you know that we are about putting ourselves first. We're about putting that cape on first. We're about finding your true, authentic self and learning how to overcome people-pleasing and start tapping into your superpowers. Because as you tap into your superpowers, you then can take care of those you love, the things you love to do, even better than what you're doing today. Because when you put yourself first, you can become the Shiro that you're meant to be. and your superpowers will help even take care of your family and your loved ones to a much bigger success than you're already doing. So if you're ready to tap into your superpowers and ready to find out how to become your true Shiro, I want you to email me, Shiro, at pearl@wsliving.com. That's Shiro at pearl@wsliving.com. And I would love to help you become the Shiro of your life.